What?
College matters.
What?
College matters. Matters.
Really?
For sure. College matters.
Alma matters. Matters.
I don't know. I think for me, it was about going deeper and deeper into the root causes of things than just simply reporting it. I think that was one of the major things for me. Because I think it's important, relevant to the story. It's like, now for past a few years, I've been studying Sri Lanka. And for me, I mean, even now, I mean, I've done a good chunk of research and field work and whatnot there. But I think for me, even still, I'm like, okay, I need to dig deeper. I need to dig deeper. I need to dig deeper. And that digging deeper element was definitely the core to my understanding of the major element, the major difference between journalism and international affairs.
That is Pratik Raj, who graduated with a bachelor's degree in international affairs from the University of Cincinnati. Hello, I'm your host, Venkat Raman. While growing up in India, Pratik participated in Model UN. He found that he enjoyed meeting students from other parts of the world and discussing and debating issues with them. With these experiences, his interest in journalism grew. He already loved writing and reporting on world issues. He was fascinated by reporters going to distant parts of the world where a crisis or events were unfolding. He decided to apply for the US for college to study journalism. As it turned out, the University of Cincinnati had something else in mind for him. Pratik joins us on our podcast to share his undergraduate experience as an international student, transition to the US, undergraduate research on feminist issues, majoring in international affairs, and advice for high schoolers. Now, before we jump into the podcast, here are the high fives, five highlights from the podcast.
That's where also kind of research comes in, and it's kind of very interesting that research as an undergraduate has been like central to my experience of not only being in academia now, but also as a person. Because I met the director for undergraduate research pretty much in my second semester, because I wanted to know how to do research as an undergrad. For me, Cincinnati happened, I think there are two reasons. The first one is I have some family in the region. Like I have some family living in close regions to Cincinnati. So that was one thing that, you know, the typical Indian thing that, okay, go where there's some family or there's someone who someone knows, and you know, there's a little bit of safety and whatnot. First day of class, I was knocking on the door for like maybe 5 minutes. It was a big classroom, so, and the professor was, I mean, I was not that late, maybe a couple of minutes or so. But yeah. I was just standing there, I was like, okay, like, the kind of was like, oh my God, am I, like, is this professor not letting me in because I'm like 2 or 5 minutes late, because I was big campus, finding class and whatnot. And then he opened the door and he's like, hey, you don't have to knock, just come in. And I was like. Some research, I did my project on, that's where I got into sort of more feminist politics and feminist security / more of what I do now. As I was looking at women's movements in Kashmir, India, and I was specifically looking at women who head households with disappeared people. So the second thing, again, is speaking to current students. There are, I mean, for me, also UC, I spoke to a bunch of students who were already here. There are Facebook groups, and there, I mean, nowadays finding people is not at all a big deal. Like, you know, it's very, very easy.
These were the high fives brought to you by
College Matters.
Alma Matters.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For my newsletter, visit almamatters.substack.com. Now, I'm sure you want to hear the entire podcast with Pratik. So without further ado, here is Pratik Raj.
If you're ready, we can jump right in.
Yes, definitely. My experience, I think, a little bit about me. background, it's kind of relevant to my experience as an undergrad at UC. Is I'm originally from India, also coming from a relatively small or medium city in Madhya Pradesh. So that was very central to my experience as well, because my cohort was mostly people from, my undergraduate cohort was mostly people from big cities in India, like Mumbai and Delhi, mostly in engineering and like STEM backgrounds. And I originally got to UC as a journalism student because it took me a lot of time to open up within my university spaces. Like, maybe 6-7 months, I wasn't part of any organizations, any groups, nothing. I would just go to my class, you know, go to my apartment and just stay there. It was still like that. Cincinnati, I know, is not one of the big cities like New York or whatever. So, but for me, it was still pretty huge and a pretty huge deal to be here. I think that it took me a while to get open up and whatnot. That's where also kind of research comes in, and it's kind of very interesting that research as an undergraduate has been like central to my experience of not only being in academia now, but also as a person, because I met the director for undergraduate research pretty much in my second semester, because I wanted to know how to do research as an undergrad. And this is in 2017. And back then, departments or even professors were not that open about research at undergraduate level, specifically in like social sciences and humanities. Coming from that environment and background, I met the director, who's Dr. M.K. Lamkin. And she introduced me to a student organization, which was pretty much my first organization at UC. And I started going to their events and whatnot. And that pretty much led to and having a wonderful experience on campus.
Let's start with... you grew up in India. Why did you pick the U.S.? Why did you want to study in the U.S.? And secondly, how did you pick the UC, University of Cincinnati?
The U.S. part is kind of, I think for me, I pretty much knew that I did not want to go into like the STEM, mainly like either medical or engineering fields. And I had been pretty open about it with my parents, I think, since the topic of, you know, picking a stream or like taking some sort of subjects and whatnot came up in our family discussions. And my parents have been nothing but amazingly supportive of the idea that do whatever you want in terms of doesn't matter. Like there's no safe, like in that home, engineering is often referred to as like the safety or like the safety net or whatnot. And at one point I was really interested in doing like something in foreign languages. And everybody would tell me, you know, you should do engineering first and secure your future and then go and do things. And I mean, a lot of people do that as well. That's definitely true. But neither did I nor my parents bought into that kind of thought. So it was very clear from the very beginning that I won't be studying in India. So I was looking it up, options and things like that. For me, Cincinnati happened, I think there are two reasons. The first one is I have some family in the region. Like I have some family living in close regions to Cincinnati. So that was one thing that, you know, the typical Indian thing that, okay, go where there's some family or there's someone who someone knows and, you know, there's a little bit of safety and whatnot. And the second thing, which I think was pretty much boiled down to, okay, I want to go to Cincinnati, was how well the UC International office actually, you know, makes the experience of someone applying to the university. So at the time I met the India representative, I think South Asia representative, who was situated in Mumbai. And I met her, and not just once, several times. And she made sure that I'm like comfortable in terms of applying, specifically because I did not come from the background where, in my school, I was the only one, perhaps the first one as well, to actually go abroad to study in my sort of 5-6 years of being in that particular school. So all of that was central, and that experience was really comforting to me and my parents as well, that okay, this is a really good thing to think about, like how the representative of the universities are really helping me before even I have applied slash gotten accepted and confirmed. So that was very central to UC. And then by the time the application process started and stuff like that, UC became like the, at my dream school or whatever, like the place I really wanted to be in. So gladly I was accepted in Cincinnati by pretty much, I don't even know in how many days, but like it was the first decision I got, and I confirmed the admission right away. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, this is what I was waiting for. I got it. That's it. I don't care. So I left a couple of other university applications in the middle and things like that. Cause So, and then when I got here, everything I had imagined, everything I had thought of, how my experience would be was pretty much, you know, exact. I mean, I had a wonderful experience. I had a wonderful initial days and months and all of that in terms of the university, the infrastructure, the service. I mean, everything from that. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm so glad that I came to UC, because I think my life trajectory would look very different if I would have ended up somewhere else.
So tell me a little bit about high school. What kind of interest did you have? You said you developed an interest in journalism at that time. How did that come about, and what kind of things interested you in high school?
So I went to an international sort of school, which had like branches all over India and I think somewhere in the Middle East as well. So that was a good experience for me to, I mean, I was in contact with people from other cities / countries throughout my high school experience. So I went to a lot of MUNs, that's Model United Nations, other sort of these, you know, competitions that happen. I remember one, which one was really interesting, was called World Scholars Cup that happened in 2014, if I'm not wrong, where we were in Mumbai. We met people from so many parts of the world, and it was actually an amazing experience. So yeah, that was very central in terms of my, where I see myself. I mean, I did not see myself doing any sort of technical or STEM oriented stuff. I loved the environment, talking about different countries, different issues, you know, public speaking / writing. Became very central to that experience. So my high school experience has definitely transformed my, you know, the way I think, the way I look at things even now. So yeah, the high school experience, I think that was definitely central. And I was part of the, so in my high school, we used to have this like cabinet kind of thing. So we'd have like president, vice president, whatnot. So I was president for a bit. I was the speaker of the school cabinet and also vice president like several different years. So that, because of that, I mean, I used to definitely used to get a lot of opportunities to write for the school bulletin or speak at events or conduct events and stuff like that. So I think my interest in journalism grew from that. Like, I liked that space. I liked talking to people. I liked reporting. I liked writing, and like just generally thinking about world issues at a very young age. So I think that's where I was like, okay, this is super, super, you know, this is, I think, what I want to do. And I think the second thing also, I think it's important to mention is, this is during 2014, 2015, and this might be a little weird perhaps, but at the time, the refugee crisis was going on in the Middle East and the Mediterranean. And I used to watch journalists go into like war zones or refugee, you know, specifically refugee camps and whatnot. And that kind of fascinated me or sort of excited me in a lot of ways. I'm like, I want to, if I become a journalist, I don't want to sit in a studio. I don't want to sit wearing a suit or whatever. I want to be on ground. I want to go to, you know, these places and bring these stories. I mean, I was definitely excited / inspired by the human experience of different things. Which kind of went very well with the MUN things, because I used to take part in committees which had like refugee or war and post-war stuff. And I mean, it's interesting. That's what I do now. So, so I think that's, all of that has shaped my experience in terms of, you know, going into the fields I went in.
Cool. So, so you accept University of Cincinnati. You come over. You said the initial transition was very good. Was what you expected it to be. So what? tell us a little bit about the academic transition. What were the classes like? What were the courses like? How was that? And then we can talk about some more of that transition.
Right. The academic life was actually pretty cool in terms of like my first couple of semesters, because it was very new. Like I didn't know what credit system was, right? I didn't know what a GPA is or how classes are conducted in this part of the world. Like that was pretty new to me.
Yeah.
Just very clearly that, you know, like in India or largely in South Asia, like if you're late to the class, it's seen. I mean, yeah. Here also, I know like it's, but like I had a thing like, you know, you would knock on the door, it doesn't matter how big the class is, and then you enter. I mean, but here it's quite different. Like people just enter whenever or leave whenever, right? And so I remember my first day of class, I was knocking on the door for like maybe 5 minutes. But it was a big classroom, so, and the professor was, I mean, I was not that late, maybe a couple of minutes or so. But I was just standing there, I was like, okay, like, just the kind of was like, oh my God, am I, like, is this professor not letting me in because I'm like 2 or 5 minutes late because I was big campus, finding class and whatnot. And then he opened the door and he's like, hey, you don't have to knock, just come in. And I was like, oh, that is so weird. And I saw people, and I saw people eating in class and like using the phone, like phones in class and whatnot. And the professor asking, so this was journalism class, that they're like, okay, well, tell me something that is happening right now, like what is trending on Twitter and things like that. And I was like, okay, this is so weird because like you're asking us to use, you know, Twitter or Facebook or whatnot in class. And I was like, okay, this is like, I need like a good few days to get used to that. So that was like a very fun way of coming out of that, you know, middle or small city person to like settling up here. Apart from that, I made sure my classes were more international focused than domestic because that was my interest. But I did take a lot of classes in focusing on American journalism or American politics. And in my second semester, I changed my major to like my primary major became international affairs. And then journalism was something of more of like, okay, I'm kind of getting out of that. But it was pretty cool. And my first research experience happened in this class, which was focusing on migration in the world history class, focusing on migration. And my professor in that class was really helpful. And I just went to her with this thing. And I was like, hey, this is an interesting thing. Maybe I want to do something more. Mm-hmm. And she was the one who introduced me to Dr. Lamkin. It's like, hey, so, you know, this person, there's apparently an office of undergraduate research. So maybe you can go and speak to them and see what, you know, what if there are any bureaucratic stuff or whatever. Because even she was pretty new to undergraduates working on research at the time. That's pretty much like my transition was fairly easy because the professors were helpful. The classes were actually quite fun. So it lightened the mood a lot compared to what I was thinking, you know, like high school classes in India, more specifically like 12th grade, which is like hardcore serious stuff, like you need to, you know, learn everything in the book, like you just know the books cover to cover. Getting out of from like literally from that into a more fun class was actually quite interesting. So yeah, that was my initial months.
What did you think of your classmates? How did they compare with what you had back home?
Interesting. I think because like the first few classes I took were more like gen ed stuff.
Yeah,
so there were people from all majors or different majors, which was interesting. Not a lot of international students, of course, because I mean, journalism or history or something, it's not that, which was cool because I think I got to really speak a lot about different parts of the world and different stories from different, you know, my experiences in India or I mean, traveling to different parts of the world. And things like that, and there was a sense of appreciation to bring a little bit more quote unquote diversity of experience, you know, in terms of stories, experiences and narratives and stuff like that. So that was amazing. I mean, I was a little hesitant in terms of going into like a American classroom like full of people who I don't recognize, who don't look like me and things like that. I think definitely that was like, okay, well, I know how to speak in English or I know how to, you know, say things, but I don't know if I'll be able to communicate and, you know, all of that nicely. Because I, again, coming from small city and all of that, is still very, was very central to my experience. But it was actually quite fun. People would come up and talk to me about different things and the things that they hear about India or Indians in general or some sort of other references and et cetera, et cetera. So actually it was really nice. I never faced any, you know, negative things, at least the best I can remember. So yeah, it was quite it was quite actually nice to be in that environment.
Let's move to undergraduate research. You mm-hmm. said you were taken in by the migration topic. Mm-hmm. You met Lampkin MK for the first time. So tell us about that. Tell us what kind of research you started doing, mm-hmm. and then we can talk about what you learned from that.
Yeah. So I think maybe in my second semester or something. Yeah, second semester, I started taking more poli-sci, the political science, international affairs oriented classes, which pretty much influenced in terms of what I want to do. Like I liked, thinking about world issues, and I was again fascinated by wars, post-war stuff, and things mm-hmm. like that, which was quite central to what we were studying at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was interested in human mobility, like how people survive in different environments, which is why it was interesting to work. So the class I was taking, the world history class that was focusing on migration, there was this one paragraph, but very limited, written about servitude during the British and French colonialism in India, and how mm-hmm. essentially Indians became indentured laborers in different parts of the world, mm-hmm. including Caribbean and Africa and other islands in the Indian and Pacific Oceans. And yeah. I was like, oh, wow, this is like, why do I not know about this? Like I've spent all my life in India and like, you know, reading history books. I mean, all the stuff. I know more about French Revolution than I know about Indians abroad. Like, I mean, I was fascinated by the fact that, oh, wow, like, I can't imagine, like, you know, people from the communities that I belong to have actually been, were part of indentured servitude, uh-huh. and their generations still live there and have transformed the culture and politics and society in these places. So yeah. that's where I pretty much started my research, actually. It's like, I just was interested in human mobility and things like that. And I met mm-hmm. MK, and it was weird again, because I was like, okay, MK's background is in biology. Right. And I was like, I don't know how to explain my research to a biologist. but I was like, a little scared in terms of, I'm like, I don't know if she'll be helpful or if what will happen. But mm-hmm. That was amazing. My first conversation with her was amazing. She heard everything I had to say about my research. She was super interested in stuff, and she pointed me to the right people in terms of what to do. And you know, like I think undergraduate research at that time, maybe it's specifically in humanities and social sciences area, was still relatively new mm-hmm. compared to STEM and whatnot. There weren't any major programs that existed for people to go through research, like which was widely available. I mean, mm-hmm. honor, like UC has on an honors program where you can do research, but honors itself is quite selective and, you know, exclusive and whatnot. So mm-hmm. those things, I think MQ is very open about that. Okay, you know what, like these things exist, but these doesn't help all the students, specifically students that come from backgrounds like mine. So I mean, my first conversation with her was amazing, and she pointed me to all the right, you know, people/resources, and also mm-hmm. the undergraduates research student organization. At the time it was called RECON, now it's called UGRS. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was, as I say, it was my first organization. I went to their meetings, I made friends with other people, I ended up completing my under the supervision of my history professor. And I, at the time, again, undergraduate research was fairly, you know, I mean, the spaces itself were quite selective of people who have master's degrees, if not PhDs. So my first publication actually was in this journal in India, and the paper did not get as much as visibility as I would have wanted it to be. But like, the good thing was that I got through that process. I got through the process of doing research, hitting the archives, reading, analyzing, mm-hmm. coding, really qualitative stuff, which definitely pushed me to do more research in terms of using my classes, and essentially also pushing me deeper and deeper into the field of political science and the things that I do now. So yeah, that is how I got interested slash also involved in undergraduate research.
Now, what was this paper about? What was the main thesis, or what was the main?
So it was mostly, again, it was done for a history class. So it was more, history sort of oriented analysis. It was more about looking at narratives and archives of people. And like, so I was looking at a lot of documentaries, a lot of, already existing literature and already existing analysis and letters and whatnot. The idea simply, the paper basically thought of like how people assimilate within culture. So I was trying to argue that there are several sorts of, stages or phases where mm-hmm. people actually assimilate within culture, specifically after servitude. So mm-hmm. the paper was basically talking about how, Indian indentured communities were being very selective initially about, in the initial phase, they were very protective of their identities, their cultural and religious and other sort of elements. And then the second phase, they see more assimilation within local culture. So they lose some parts, they keep some parts. And then the third phase is where, you see mobility outside of the community. So you see interracial or interethnic marriages, you see changes in language and food and these cultures. And then ultimately the final thing was about how people from indentured laborers actually get involved in political and social change. So running for office or sort of more, resisting discriminatory policies and things like that. My major focus was Trinidad and Tobago and Fiji. Mm-hmm. Those two countries were the major focus. I think it wasn't for some particular reason, but I think the most resources I could find were from there. So I started doing more political science research after that. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe in future I will pick that up again. But that was the paper.
Okay, cool. So tell us about some other
research-wise. Research-wise, I think third year I moved a little bit more towards my political science interest. Like, again, this was quite interesting and I kept going back a little bit perhaps, but I think I became more fascinated with more current day wars. Again, this is 2016, 2017 we're talking about. So Rohingya refugee crisis started. So mm-hmm. I think this world events has a very important role to play in my interest. Like, okay, what is happening in the world is now. It's like, okay, this is fascinating. So definitely I did what I definitely would do, which I think put me differently as a different student from others. And I say this because my professors have told me this, is that I would, class papers, I would actually go beyond than just simply just writing up a paper. I would pick up topics and I would do a little bit more research. I would do whatever I could do in my capacity of an undergraduate student to, present a paper in terms of the class. I, for some reason, class papers became this small steps I would like to take to, write something bigger. Mm-hmm. So yeah, in my second year, I actually wrote up a paper on influx of refugees, again, coming from mostly Rohingya refugees from Bangladesh to India, so regions of Assam and mm-hmm. Eastern parts of the country. This was written for a class, then I developed it further, and I sent it to a conference in Budapest, which was an undergraduate research conference, which I didn't know actually existed. my professor who had supervised, I don't know how I got there, but and my professor sent me this link to something and my history professor, and she has actually gotten a master's, I think, degree from Central European University in Budapest. And she's like, hey, please just have a look. And I was like, yeah, I no way I'm getting selected to this. Like, come on. And then I applied, I got it. you know, all this stuff happened that way. And I remember August 2018, I was in Budapest, and my first time being in a like an academic conference outside of my university spaces. Fascinating experience. And but at the same time, I had also presented at the undergraduate scholarly showcase that happens at University of Cincinnati every year, which is organized by the Office of Undergraduate Research. So that was my first sort of presentation experience. It was quite interesting to be there, like a lot of good, you know, a lot of good feedback, a lot of good responses. I think that definitely was inspirational. I was like, okay, actually people are really interested in, you know, listening to what I'm working on. It's not like boring stuff that nobody wants to hear. Right. So yeah, so those two things that happened in my second my third-ish year was quite nice, I think, to actually push me a little bit more towards research and thinking about a life within, you know, research spaces. So yeah, the conference in Budapest was amazing. I met so many interesting people and interesting, research that was happening around the world. And yeah, and then I think I was in my fourth year after that, which was like serious. Okay, now capstone project. Like, okay, I was sure that I'm applying to grad school. And I was sure that, okay, this undergraduate research experience has transformed me enough to think about a life within research spaces and academia. So yeah, that's what I did in my second, third, most of that year.
Okay, so now tell me about your capstone.
Yeah, so fourth year, I mean, my capstone, capstone research, I did my project on, that's where I got into sort of more feminist politics and feminist security slash more of what I do now, is I was looking at women's movements in Kashmir, India, and I was specifically looking at women who head households with disappeared people. So in the 1990s, there was this massive militancy that happened in Kashmir. And as a response to that, the Indian government also pushed a lot of militarization, and this new thing that came up was disappearances, which again, is the level of uncertainty that exists within communities, that people are, neither they're dead, neither they're alive. So you are in a kind of limbo situation. But as much as I was interested in the act of disappearance itself, but I was more interested in what happens to wives and mothers of disappeared people, because specifically in areas like Kashmir, which are quite underdeveloped at the time, and even though now also, women survive as matriarchs of family, depend on the men of the family as the structures of society has pushed them to be that way. What happens to these women after the act of disappearance has happened? Like, while these women have to, resist and mobilize and fight for justice and fight for, to know about the whereabouts of their husbands or family members, but they also have to survive. They also have to eat. They also have to feed their families. All of those things. So that was my project in my undergraduate capstone, and I was basically looking at I was looking at how the system itself that is supposed to empower women in these societies actually puts them in more disadvantage, puts them more into the cycle, what I call a cycle of violence that looks at from, you know, different facets, such as institutionally not recognizing disappearances. So what happens is that these women can't prove the disappearances of their husbands or sons or whatnot, and then can't apply for resources that are available to them by the government. So all of those things, I mean, that's just one example. But then I was also looking at how sort of patriarchal systems affect these women. These women are pushed into unpaid care or those jobs, or into very badly paid labor, and all of those things, which is, that was my project. And that's pretty much also, I mean, now I'm doing that in a different context, but that was my project. And I presented it at a couple of places as well. That pushed me to going more deeper into sort of more what I do now is political science, mobilization, protests, and things like that.
So, from the in the capstone, did you have any I don't know, suggestions or were you just analyzing the situation and kind of, you know, providing some sort of structure to understand it?
I think at that point, also the scope in terms of like the scope of my undergraduate capstone was quite limited.
Yeah.
In terms, because it wasn't a thesis, so I didn't have much space and whatnot. So my focus was more towards providing more visibility to the structure of violence and things like that. But I think, I mean, that's definitely was the starting point. And when it comes to solutions and recommendations, that's what I'm doing now in some ways, that I'm more oriented towards thinking about how do we improve, you know, life of women in specifically in these areas. Or again, I'm more interested in post-war societies. I think that at that moment, it was more about recognizing what exists and recognizing this system. And then, yeah.
So let's talk before we go any further about your major. Now, you said you switched from journalism to international affairs, and journalism sort of, I don't know if it dissolved or disappeared or went
present. It did dissolve and disappear, yeah.
Okay, that's fair enough. But was it just the introduction to those topics in your first semester that kind of energized you and inspired you about this area? Or was it just sort of somehow an accumulation of all the things that you'd done in high school, all those conferences and mm-hmm. you know, other things you were talking about? What do you think it was that sort of pushed you towards this major?
I think it's hard to point at one, or maybe even point at several things, but I think it was I think for me it was about going deeper and deeper into the root causes of things than just simply reporting it. I think that was one of the major things for me, because I think it's important, relevant to the story. It's like, now for past a few years, I've been studying Sri Lanka. And for me, I mean, even now, I mean, I've done a good chunk of research and field work and whatnot there. But I think for me, even still, I'm like, okay, I need to dig deeper. And that digging deeper element was definitely the core to my understanding of the major element, the major difference between journalism and international affairs. And I was like, okay, well, you know, it's nice. I like writing, which I also can do well. I'm researching, but I think I'm more interested in bringing sort of more in-depth issues and finding the root causes of it, and not simply, not to say that journalism doesn't do that and doesn't have research.
Sure.
But for me, I think that element at that point of time was more like, okay, I need to do some more in-depth work. Slash, at the same time, I think I was getting very comfortable in spaces such as libraries and archives, and like, you know, spending a lot of time, which is now, like, it has gotten down to 50%, because now I do a lot of field work. So I do get to have that journalistic, you know, that journalistic flair in my everyday life. So it's quite nice now that there is a quite good balance of it. But I think the initial training, whatever I did receive, played a very important role in the things that I do now. But yeah, I think that was that digging deeper element and finding solutions also, yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about this, the one in Sri Lanka? What are you doing? Just give me a feel for, you know, what you're doing and what you're thinking. How do you present something that, you know, moves it forward? I don't know about solutions, but at least mm-hmm. helps mm-hmm. the people there.
Yeah. So I think my major introduction to Sri Lanka as itself as a case study, or sort of more central to my research and work, came in my master's degrees. I don't know, for some reason, I mean, I'm not Sri Lankan, my family is not from south of India, so none of that, like, you know, connection exists, if you may, you know, think about that, because a lot of people do mistake me for Sri Lankan, and for good cause. I mean, I know a lot about the country, and I pretty much talk about it mm-hmm. in every second sentence, so that is definitely very true. So I think for me, the connection came from that very element of human, you know, understanding human survival in difficult points of times. And for me, Sri Lanka became this interesting thing because I graduated college in 2019. And 2019 is the year when Easter Day attacks happened in Sri Lanka. And I was very closely following that for some reason. And that's where my interest grew into looking deeper and deeper and deeper. And it's very funny. There's this movie, there's this Bollywood movie called Madras Cafe. I don't know if you... So I used to watch that movie a lot. And for some reason, when someone asked me, why do you do Sri Lanka as like a North Indian... my first response is, you know, there's a movie called Madras Cafe. And it's for all good reasons, that movie is pretty much the central reason why I'm studying Sri Lanka. So thanks to the directors and everybody part of that film. So I think, anyway, so that's where it started. And I've changed trajectories within Sri Lanka also quite a lot. But now I'm specifically looking into, again, I'm looking into disappearances. So Sri Lanka is currently the second, Sri Lanka has the second most highest cases of disappearances. Even now, like in 14 years after the war, there have been no major interventions coming with respect to disappearances. Specifically, I'm looking at Tamil women. So even though disappearances in Sri Lanka happened with two major instances. So one was during the 1980s, the Marxist-Lenin militancy group called JVP that had the whole insurrection and incidency in 1980s. That's where the major case, like the starting of the disappearances started in the southern part of the country, which is predominantly Sinhalese Buddhist. And then the disappearances cases amongst Tamil people in general started in the 1990s and then ended, I mean, it was as recent as I said in 2015 also was going on. And newer forms of disappearance, like and different kinds of disappearance, different ways and methods of performing the very act of disappearing someone had come out fairly recently also, which is where my sort of interest is now that the war has ended, but the areas that were former war zones are still heavily, heavily militarized. There was a count, I might be wrong in the exact number, but there was this particular figure that came out that there are seven military people to every one person in the northern and the eastern regions of Sri Lanka, which is predominantly Tamil. I mean, again, as I said, I'm not very clear on the figure, but very heavily militarized. So my interest simply is that a woman's life whose husband, again, I'm looking at mostly wives, whose husband is disappeared, there's no knowledge whether that person exists or doesn't exist, where they are, whatever. And this particular woman is living in an area which is heavily militarized, and after so many years, the military is part of everything from education to healthcare to, more importantly, capitalist interventions in these areas. Military is involved in building up factories and industries which are supposedly there to empower these women. But how does empowerment of women happen without recognizing their troubles, without recognizing their ongoing issues, without acknowledgement to their suffrage? And the continuous demonization and continuous sort of vilifying of the people who've died in the war and suppressing any form of, you know, reconciliation and truth seeking and whatnot. So my research right now strictly look into, I mean, that's how what I used to, what I call is how women survive in militarized and violence, the cycle of violence that pushes women. So these women who I am I'm focusing my research on are wives, mostly wives and some mothers of disappeared people. And they work in, you know, military setups or military, militarized regions such as garment factories or farms and whatnot, also built on the lands that the military has grabbed from the people of the Tamil home, of the people of the Tamil homelands. Mm-hmm. So while all of this is going on, women are being paid very badly. They are continuous, again, militarized violence also takes place. And in the midst of all of this, they're also fighting for justice and fighting to, you know something about their disappeared husbands or sons or whatnot, and finding some form of justice. So why do we create these systems? Why do post-war societies create these systems that you know, these women who are very much capable of doing anything and everything in the world are simply stuck in these incapable, incompetent environments? So I think that's what I'm doing right now, to look into how these systems are very well crafted. These aren't natural, these aren't organically there. These are very, very well crafted systems to make sure the suppression of sort of ethnic minorities or suppression, mostly for women, actually takes place. And Sri Lanka has an interesting history, because Sri Lanka, where one of the very dangerous militant organization was part of the war, which took place, I mean, for 30 years, women were very much part of the militants. Women were soldiers, women were pilots, women were fighters, women were everything. And that's one of the examples that a lot of political scientists use, that we must not forget that women themselves have political agency, and women can be as violent, in fact, more violent than men if it comes to fighting against oppression. So that's another way of keeping these women stuck in this particular cycle of violence, so that this radicalization, the term that they often use, doesn't happen, but then also takes away their political agency, and seeing them as apolitical, you know, an apolitical people. So my basically research situates there. I'm interested in looking at how these women resist these environments, how these environments are created and crafted with very well planning, and essentially also recommending how, I mean, recommendation part is something I'm still exploring, but how will people get out of these systems, or how do we not go through this whole, you know, creating these systems in the future in Sri Lanka or elsewhere? So yeah, that's pretty much the gist of what I'm doing right now.
How do you do this research? How do you gather data? What do you do? Say the Sri Lankan thing. How are you getting this information, or how are you getting any, you know, things you could use?
So I do a lot of field work. I spend pretty much all my summers in Sri Lanka, which is it's great. It's wonderful to be in that country. Sri Lanka has been in news for past 1 year, of course, for all the, you know, the protests and whatnot. I'll come to that perhaps, to the protest element as well, because I'm doing something major on the protest on an academic end as well. But I spend a lot of time in Sri Lanka. And I'm planning my fieldwork for this summer, maybe next summer. So, the idea is to collect the narrative itself from women, because one of the major aspects of doing research in feminist, political science or feminist, you know, spaces is actually providing space to these women themselves. So I collect oral histories of women, the women I described. I use their oral histories of, you know, surviving in these environments. I do a lot of archival research in libraries and archives in Sri Lanka. And I mean, some abroad as well, those who exist, but mostly my research is focused on gathering data from the very, very ground itself. And basically, you know, I observed a lot of things. I spoke to trade unions and NGOs and et cetera, et cetera. So it is very much like a primary first-hand collection of data, and then that is brought into, you know, the academic world. So that's how I gather my data.
Let's switch gears a little bit. Come down to something very simple, I think, relatively speaking. What kind of advice would you give high schoolers as they think about college? You know, you are started out as an international student, you're still an international student. Maybe people in other parts of the world, as they think about coming to college, maybe coming to a university in the US.
I think the first advice in terms of, let me say this. Like, I have two themes of advice, if you may. The first one would be more practical, is look up people who are representatives of the university in your country. I think that is very important to speak with them, and most of them, I mean, their jobs is to speak with students. So, so that is very important in my opinion. And so for my master's, I went to KU Leuven in Belgium, which was also, I mean, it's a very small city in Belgium, where, you know, if you get out of the university spaces, barely anybody speaks English. But even for that, even for masters, I actually spoke to country representatives. I spoke to international people and people from my program and others as well. I think that is very important to gather some perspective, because that's one thing. The second thing, again, is speaking to current students. There are, I mean, for me also UC, I spoke to a bunch of students who were already here. There are Facebook groups, and there, I mean, nowadays finding people is not at all a big deal. Like, you know, it's very, very easy. So definitely have those things, you know, and LinkedIn is a great support. I know, like, LinkedIn, I had my LinkedIn made way before even I got here, because for me, one way to contact people was through that. I mean, Facebook, I mean, at that time in 2016, Facebook was still a big thing. But I think, so I think LinkedIn is a great way, or like all of these, you know, sort of more professionally oriented social networking sites, whatever. So yeah, that is one good thing, because I really wanted some more human perspective, not looking at websites, not looking at blogs. I mean, those are great, but now things like what, you know, Venkat, you're doing, and these podcasts and whatnot exist. This didn't exist as much in 2016. So now people who apply, I mean, I definitely encourage doing a little bit of research, talking to people, listening to podcasts or listening, reading blogs or whatnot from alumni or current students in these, in the universities and programs that you're targeting. And obviously also speaking with the country representative or regional representative at least once, that would be my solid advice, which helps you, you know, narrow down whether you want to go to a place or not.
Sure.
And not just about, I mean, they tell you things about, like, what is it like living in Cincinnati? Like, what is it like being in, you know, in and around campus and whatnot? All of those things as well are very, very important. So those things, that's the practical advice. The second more thematic advice, I think, or more this general advice, would be open to, you know, possibilities of changing majors or exploring your interests. I think that's one thing, because in specifically coming from India or generally in like, you know, South Asia, there is that thing, you get into engineering or medical and you just study that. There is limited scope for doing more general or gen ed related stuff, which I feel I've spoken to. And now my job is, my GA-ship is speaking to, you know, students who are interested in undergraduate research. It's interesting to be on the flip side of it. Just 2 years or 3 years of that. So I think now a lot of people I speak to undergraduate students coming from different parts of the world. They come for engineering, they come for medical, biological sciences, but they're like, oh, Dwight, this is really interesting. This art thing is really interesting. This music is interesting, whatnot. So there is always possibility of, you know, adding majors, adding minors or certificate program, which is something I believe quite unique to the American system of education. I don't know. I mean, it didn't exist in Belgium, so I can definitely say that, but I don't know about other parts of the world. So being open to that, having a little bit of open mind is really important, because you meet a lot of new people, you get new perspective about your own field, your own life, your own, you know, experiences as a student in the university. So that would be my major advice if you are applying, you know, generally also, to have a little bit of open mind, be open to possibilities. I think that is definitely very important.
Okay, so Prateek, we're going to start to wind down, but before we do that, I want to give you a chance to share some memory or vignette or some anecdote, something that you think listeners might like.
I think this, maybe, I don't know, like, there's so many things, but I think one thing which actually might just be interesting would be how I got back to UC is something which is quite fascinating. I mean, I actually don't believe why. So when I got my bachelor's degree, I wanted to sort of explore the world and all that, because I was 20 years old when I got my bachelor's. Pretty much stayed in Cincinnati, you know, not even went to like other very fancy places and whatnot around, because I'm not that outgoing of a person. So for me, it was like, okay, well, you know what? I'm going to go to a different part of the world. And that's how I got to Belgium. And I spent 2 years there, got 2 master's degrees. This is also the year of COVID, so that was another element of just staying there. Yeah. But I kind of didn't want to come back to the US for a bunch of reasons. Maybe one of the major reasons was my focus on Sri Lanka, because finding someone to do research, I mean, finding someone to supervise research on Sri Lanka is very difficult generally, but there is more stuff, more opportunities were available to me in terms of my country of focus in the UK. Applying for the PhD programs, it was a very difficult time because funding was being cut for international or generally also. So this was a very, very difficult time for me to, you know, be there. And that's when I basically reached out to MK and I said, I applied and I didn't get anything. I'm like panicking and whatnot and things like that. So she was like, well, if you are applying to UC, I might have a thing for you. And I was like, well, you know, I don't know. Okay. And then at the same time, I reached out to my capstone supervisor, and she's like, well, oh, I will be happy to supervise a research on Sri Lanka. Like, you know, why not and whatnot? And I was interested in doing something on feminist politics and whatnot and getting more in-depth knowledge of feminist world or like generally women and gender studies. So it happened at a very weird time because I applied to come back to UC. So I'm in a program which is a dual degree, which is a MA in Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies and PhD in Political Science. So the idea is that you incorporate what you learn in the first year of being in WGSS in your PhD, which is what I'm doing. So it was quite fascinating. I mean, in the middle of like, I applied in May, I got through the program, my funding, MK was like, well, you know, if you're coming back, I have a GA ship for you. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, it happened pretty much like overnight, in my opinion, that things changed, and I was really resisting coming back to the US for a lot of reasons. I also wanted to be closer to Belgium because my two of my very close friends who I can't imagine my life without live there, and I was like, I don't know, I can't imagine myself going back to the US so far and whatnot. I was really resisting that, and then just in a matter of a couple of days, everything changed. I applied in 10 days, I had my acceptance and whatnot, and in a month or two, I was on my way back to Cincinnati, and it was like, so 2016 again, I was like, oh, well, there's nothing new, but everything was new. I was in a completely different phase of life and whatnot. So I think that's something I still don't believe that happened. It's been 2 years or whatnot. 2 years or so. And I still am fascinated by like, okay, this is so weird. And when people ask me about like, my experience of getting into the program, and I have to start with saying, well, you know, my case is really different because this happened. So I don't know how it would work for others. So that's, I think this is something I really don't believe happened with me. And now I'm having like the most amazing time as a student in the program, as a teacher also because I TA and things like that, as a mentor who supervises or mentors undergraduate researchers. I have two mentees, and also as a person who works with undergraduates very closely. So yeah, this is just one thing. And I think an advice could be to students who are going into university now would be make connections with people, establish and keep those connections. Because I can't imagine being here without like having some sort of personal and intellectual connections with my professors. I think them knowing me and all of those really, really helped because they're like, oh, well, I know who you are. I know your intellect. I know what you're capable of and all of those things. So that's another thing I think is important to do networking, you know, make solid and good connections with people, with faculty, with professors and other people as well. So yeah, this is, I think, one memory which I'm sure I will never forget. And I don't know how long it will take me to accept that, oh yeah, this happened, like, you know, like life changed in a matter of a couple of days. So yeah.
You know, they said truth is stranger than fiction, or life is stranger than fiction. So, definitely. Well, this is awesome. This is it was a great conversation. Thank you so much for sharing so much with me. And I'm sure the listeners will benefit immensely. And so
thank you so much for inviting me. This was really, really wonderful. And again, you're doing great work. And I really hope that, you know, students listen to different and varied experiences of people on your podcast. And I'm sure it's helping them a lot. So great work, of course.
Thank you. And I'm sure we'll talk again in the future. Keep definitely. In touch on different topics that you're pursuing. I really love them. So take care. Talk soon.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi again. Hope you enjoyed our podcast with Prateek Raj on his undergraduate experiences as an international student at the University of Cincinnati. Prateek's story is one of curiosity, the desire to dig deeper and understand the issues that matter to him. His passion around feminist issues caused by migration, Kashmir, Rohingya refugee crisis, post-war Sri Lanka, to name a few. He discovered that he wanted to do more than report the news. He wanted to research and find solutions. So he decided to move on from journalism and major in international affairs. I hope Prateek's undergraduate experience as an international student inspires you to explore the University of Cincinnati for your own undergraduate program. For your questions or comments on this podcast, please email podcast@almamatters.io. Thank you all so much for listening to our podcast today. Transcripts for this podcast and previous podcasts are on almamatters.io/podcasts. To stay connected with us, subscribe to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify, or visit anchor.fm/almamatters to check us out. Till we meet again, take care and be safe. Thank you.
College Matters.
Alma Matters.